Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop Fun.
Welcome to Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson, the podcast for people who like to listen to things. Things that Tom says, things that Tom's guests have to say. It's the podcast that gives and gives and gives and doesn't expect anything in return. Okay, that's not completely true, but it's free. Anyway, here's Tom.
Hello, everybody. I'm Tom Wilson, and welcome to another edition of the Big Pop Fun Podcast. Thanks so much for downloading this, for tuning in. It's always great to hear from you guys. You can email me from TomWilsonUSA.com. You would think that a person of my international superstardom would have a team of 30 fielding incoming emails and offers for personal appearances in the third world. Not really. If you email me off the website there, it just comes to me. I get it. And I thank you for doing so. And for whatever, Facebooking me or Twittering me or whatever we're doing now. But I do that stuff. And like everyone, yes, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm on Facebook and the thing in the upper left corner or whatever. You 7 trillion people have poked you. Would you like to poke them? I don't even know what that is. You know, Bob wants to borrow a rake in Farmville. I don't even know how to begin to do that. But I'm on Twitter, so do that. It's Tom Wilson USA on Twitter. I don't know how you retweet with the links or anything. I just stare at that big thing, just reading people's tweets. That's what I do, and I read Bad Banana. And I followed Bad Banana from very early on because it was really funny. You know, of course, I followed comedy friends of mine and everything. Everyone seemed to be following this Bad Banana. A guy, a girl, I didn't know. Websites would have this top 10 comedy Twitterers to follow. Bad Banana. So I follow Bad Banana. Really funny stuff. Really good. Consistently. Every day until I think, this must be a professional comedian. I gotta know this person because this is really very good stuff. So after a while, after a few months of this very consistent, funny stuff, I finally figure out how I could message Bad Banana. So I tweet the Bad Banana saying something, you know, hey, great stuff, buddy. I respect your skills. He tweets back, why, thank you. I respect your skills. You know, so we go back and forth. It turns out Bad Banana is an advertising executive from Omaha, Nebraska, named Tim Seidel, who is a wonderful guy, a very, very keen intellect, and as sharp a wit as I've ever been around. I was, by chance, I was going to Omaha within a couple months of us meeting there on Twitter. So I say, well, I'm coming to Omaha. You want to go have some lunch or come to the show? He comes to the show. We have a very, very nice lunch. And he's a new friend of mine. And I thought it would be interesting to talk to him about his experiences of really being one of the early people whose career and life has been changed just because of 140 characters and coming up with funny little lines over and over and over, which was proof to me and everybody that if the quality is good and consistent, somebody in New York or Hollywood or somewhere will contact you and say, hey, that stuff is pretty. And I don't mean me. No, I mean producers now because he's out here actually writing comedy. So he came over to the Wilson World Studios here in sunny California, a half hour drive from the sparkling Pacific Ocean where it's only $7 to park. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Twitter phenomenon, Bad Banana, Tim Seidel.
It's Big Pop Fun.
We're here with Tim Seidel. Tim, welcome.
Hi, Tom.
Did you have a MySpace page?
No, I never did.
You never had one?
Never had a MySpace.
Did you have Facebook? Did you have a Facebook before Twitter?
No, I begrudgingly went onto Facebook just a couple years ago, or a year ago or
really?
So. I can tell you the exact story of starting my Twitter account.
Okay, but no social networking before Twitter?
No social networking before Twitter.
Wow.
Working in advertising in Nebraska, I read an article about Twitter in a advertising journal. This would have been it was the first weekend of March of 2007. My wife was and kids were out visiting family. I was all alone in the house. It was a Friday night or something like that. And I'd always wanted to start a blog and hadn't really thought about doing that. And I thought, you know what? I have a free weekend this weekend. I'm going to set up a blog. And then I might as well check out that Twitter thing and see what that's like. And I literally took the picture of David Ogilvy that I had already on my desktop because I liked the guy and I liked that picture. And I used that to set up my account. I chose Bad Banana in 3 seconds because
just boom.
Because I didn't want my name associated with it. I was nervous. You know, I didn't want people to steal my identity or whatever. And I just wanted to get on and dabble with it. And it was so simple, and I liked it. But I figured I would dump the account in 2 weeks. So that was my first foray.
Of just so you didn't make the blog.
I did end up making a blog that weekend.
And was that kind of a personal blog, expressions that you art that you wanted to do, or was that was not advertising based?
No.
It was just Tim. I have unusual thoughts and things, and I just want to put stuff out there.
Linking to funny YouTube videos or articles or whatever, and then after a little while, I started to kind of write a little bit of some original comedy, and it was just sort of a little creative outlet.
Uh-huh.
I never really intended anyone to really read it. And Twitter, seriously, for the first year or so on Twitter, it was chatting. I mean, talking to people.
It was just, how are you, Bob?
Kind of. It was a strange community.
And
it,
were friends of yours there in Nebraska on Twitter?
No, nobody. No.
It seems like it was very, very early in Twitter. I mean, just kind of...
It was so early in Twitter that there was sort of this camaraderie of people who are on Twitter, of sort of like, well, if you're on it, you must be an interesting person. And we'd kind of follow each other and kind of talk. And I still remember early on seeing somebody tweet, watching the fireworks over the Thames. And I remember thinking, well, that's cool. That's happening right now. You know, and somebody's doing that on their phone, and wow, that's kind of interesting. And of course, Twitter has morphed into something entirely different. But there was a while there I would link to advertising articles. I would just chat to people, but at some point, I would something would happen in the news, and I would type a little joke or something, sort of a late night
little commentary on the piece of news.
And people would laugh. This was before retweet buttons. This was before anything.
They didn't have a retweet button.
No, people would literally type LOL at reply me LOL. This was before at replies. So it was awkward. You like had to like look into the stream
to find your LOLs, to find the
I sound like one of those early astronauts.
It's kind of interesting.
And the capsule was only the size of this.
But I mean, how fast things are moving. I mean, it's amazing that you can have sort of a old times of Twitter, and we're only talking. What year are we talking about?
It was 2007.
Yeah.
I always kind of imagine that the people in San Francisco who invented Twitter kind of thought it'd be, and it'll be super hipsters with our advanced phones and talking about which DJ is playing at which place and come on down to the whatever club. And it ended up being kind of a bunch of middle-aged people kind of saying, hello, how are you in Missouri? And
just rake the yard.
Yeah.
Feeling good.
And it was a lot of that kind of stuff. And there was a sense of, It was just interesting to see what other people were doing. I know that sounds super naive and weird, but it was just sort of new technology. It was so simple. It was interesting. And then I started to get the feedback of kind of writing comedy and stuff. And
so the LOLs literally kind of steered you toward...
I realized this is scratching an itch that I didn't know that I had. This is interesting.
It was the itch to what? To get that feedback.
To get feedback. To have people say that's funny. To I imagine it's the same feeling somebody has when they get on stage with a microphone and start to have people laugh at their jokes. And it's sort of intoxicating and sort of interesting. And it was something I could do without going to an open mic on a Friday night.
Were you, before that, were you the funny guy at the advertising agency in Nebraska?
You know, that's interesting. You should say that. Maybe sort of. Somebody connected with me on Facebook from like high school, and they said, you were never funny. Well, now you're the funny guy? Uh-huh. You were never funny. But
so the funny was really inside, was your kind of own self-talk or that you actually
sort
expressed
of,
on Twitter.
You know, I would email jokes to people, or I would, you know, if something weird was happening in the news, I'd make up sort of a little joke and maybe just kind of announce it to the rest of the studio, and everyone would roll their eyes and uh-huh. get back to work. And
so you were sort of the dry guy, a little bit quieter in that meeting of advertising people.
Yeah, the guy in the living room who's kind of cracking jokes and you know.
But you never stood up in a meeting saying, I think marching bands are homeless orchestras.
Right.
Anyone ever thought of that?
No. I wasn't one of those guys where I think people would say, oh, he's whatever room he's in, he's the funniest guy in the room. I'm more quiet. I'm more, which is why I, you know, don't get on stage and perform. But And then they created the retweet button, and then they did other things, and then other people got involved. And for a while there, still people were kind of figuring out, you know, what's going on with Twitter. And I kind of went to a full-time joke mode. And I kind of figured, you know, I'm just going to – I've kind of done the chatting thing. Mm-hmm. I've done all this. And when somebody goes to my page, I want them to see 12 jokes instead of, hey, hi, hello, how are you today?
Right.
You know? And that's when things kind of started taking off. It was a conscious decision. Mm-hmm. Biz Stone, one of the co-creators of Twitter, had an interview with NPR Weekend Edition where he said that I pretty much invented Twitter comedy, which I don't know if that's true, but I'm going to have that on my gravestone anyway.
Well, the guy who invented Twitter said you're the king of Twitter comedy.
You invented
it.
And I'm not sure he meant that in a good way because Twitter has now kind of become that where people are just trying to out-clever each other.
What
and
do you
write
think he
things.
Wanted besides gathering information about people to sell?
Well, yeah. You know, I think overturning governments in Egypt. Things like that.
Right.
That instead of jokes about coffee and things like that. But, you know, and then it's also kind of funny. I remember at one point, just to show how early I was on Twitter and how much I just kind of talked and rambled, I looked up and I saw round numbers. I had 5,000 followers on my 10,000th tweet. Those round numbers just stuck out. Mm-hmm. So now I've done, I think I'm close to 14,000 and 530,000 followers or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it went exponential.
Right.
All from kind of deciding I was just going to do jokes and then kind of some mainstream press and some mainstream recognition.
Yeah, what happened? I mean, as it's beginning, when did the truck start gaining traction and you started to go, what is going on? Like, what is that?
There was sort of a crossroads where Twitter was just kind of starting to go mainstream, but everyone was kind of thinking, what is this? This is silly. This is stupid. What do you use this for? Mm-hmm. And people were able to say and write their article, newspaper articles or magazine articles about it and say, this is a good news source. This is a good this. And a good funny source is this guy. And I started showing up in mainstream stuff. And then NPR kind of latched onto me. And I did a few appearances on Weekend Edition on NPR. And I would Scott Simon on NPR kind of took a shine to me and kind of introduced me as sort of the NPR Twitter bard.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I would do an appearance there, I would just see the follower. I mean, I'd get 10, 20, 30, 40,000 followers.
And that's not going to be on your tombstone? Scott Simon says you were the NPR Twitter bard?
You know, again.
Bard, but the other guy's thing? You invented
Scott
Twitter?
Scott Simon is, again, the nicest guy. I mean, everybody I've had interactions with, you are the nicest guy in the world. Scott Simon is so nice. I mean, I've met so many interesting people through Twitter. It's been amazing.
So the NPR thing started to really, really build a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then the retweets happen, and then it becomes an exponential thing.
And again, I think people were just kind of looking for a reason to do Twitter. I mean, why would I want to do this? And it's like, okay, you mean the kind of jokes that I sort of get at late night, I could kind of get at 3 o'clock in the afternoon while I'm at work? Interesting. I'll check this guy out. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's what kind of happened. And then I would get feedback from people, emails from comedians or other people kind of in the entertainment industry that kind of, people are noticing this and they say I'm good at this. And that kind of just encouraged me to keep going. And
well, they're really well crafted. And the success on Twitter is deserved because
it's – congratulations for seeing that.
It's because
it speaks well of you that you.
It's consistently
that.
Good stuff. I mean, they're well crafted jokes that nobody knew if you were a comedian. Nobody knew who you were. I reached out. I reached out and whatever messaged you through Twitter, figuring this guy must be a comedian that I know.
A lot of people. I get a lot of that. People assume that the Nebraska part was made up as part of like a character.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people assume I'm a team of writers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got a lot of that. Yeah, or that I'm somebody famous and that I'm doing this anonymously, but I'm doing this. I'm just out there. And early on, I was kind of making fun of Twitter. I mean, it was sort of this idea of being able to do jokes where everyone's talking about what they're doing right now, but you can't see what they're doing right now. So I did a lot of jokes about, I'm getting horrible cell reception here under my neighbor's bed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like that, where the little theater of the mind, where it was kind of making fun of the whole Twitter thing. And I think people enjoyed kind of keeping up with their friends on Twitter and then having the sort of random little chuckle thrown in the middle. And that's one of the reasons why I took off.
So here you are in Los Angeles, California. A fascinating path that's taken you here. But what was the beginning of – you've got a lot of Twitter tweets and you're thinking, I think I'm going to – pack my juggling clubs and and go and find myself a circus.
Well, I received a lot of little back channel emails and messages, and I don't know whose name to drop. Is that gauche to
drop names? I think out here, I think you're allowed to drop names if you just know them and stuff. It's if you're in Omaha and you mention these people, people say, oh, name dropper. I think out here it's like, well, the guy is the guy who called me and I know the guy. So
I would get, and anyone can email me. So, I mean, I'm two clicks away from people finding my email and sending me emails. So I get lots of interesting emails. But occasionally you get one where you go, oh, that's interesting. Who is this person? I got a late night email from somebody saying, you're really funny, you should be writing movie scripts. And I thought, well, that's kind of a specific, email. And I looked and it's like, okay, I think maybe I know who this person is. And I wrote back and said, I'm just kind of here in Nebraska and maybe I would write something if I knew somebody would actually read it. And she wrote back and said, well, I'm sitting here with my husband, Rob Reiner, at a campsite for our daughter's Girl Scouts or something like that. And he's laughing like crazy at your tweets and submit something. And he says he'll read it. And I just, for like a couple of days, I was kind of, Rob Reiner? Spinal Tap and other things, but Spinal Tap, Rob Reiner. And that kind of was my first little glimpse of, okay, maybe people are kind of looking beyond the traditional avenues and looking for talent in weird places, or you could kind of accidentally stumble into something where something could be interesting. And then I've just received a lot of things. Yours, since you're sitting here, your email, I remember very clearly, was, I'm a stand-up comedian. I've done comedy for 30 years or 20 years or whatever. I aged you there. I'm sorry.
No problem. I've been doing it 67 years.
Yeah. And you're really funny, and you really know how to craft a joke or something like that. And I thought that was just amazing that you reached out and said that, but also encouraging. I mean, and inspiring, because it's sort of like, okay, well, sometimes tweeting seems like an empty endeavor, and maybe this is worth exploring more and do more and more of it. And so it's a slow cumulative effect of getting a lot of people reaching out to me and all that. And now, yeah, like we're sitting here in Los Angeles, and
so the fact is,
meeting
if,
with people.
Yeah, if Rob Reiner hadn't been ignoring his daughter at her own Girl Scout camp and reading his phone, you wouldn't be here.
Exactly. Exactly.
Are you having a good time with it? I mean, has it been, did it ever get unusual and calling you out of a life that you felt good about and you're fine in Omaha?
Wow, that's, well,
you know, have you felt, wait a minute, I'm not sure it's a roller coaster and everything, but should everyone just get on it because somebody goes, hey, come aboard the roller coaster?
That's a really, really good question. Every stage of my career has been really thought out. I got married, my wife and I got married 21 years ago, between my junior and senior year in college. Not something I recommend everyone do. We were stupid and romantic, and when our parents kind of were like, really? You could wait a little bit? And we were kind of like, no, we're doing this. It'll work out. Always been really motivated to graduate college early, to get that job, to get that promotion, to be vice president of an advertising agency before I'm 28, to run my own place. Every stage has been really well thought out and planned. And Twitter has been this just gigantic random machine that has created all kinds of things that I never, ever would have thought was possible. And at one point I did just kind of, okay, I'm just going to kind of see what happens. This is an interesting path. And I told my wife, who's so supportive, God bless her, at every step, whether it's starting my own business or kind of exploring some of these things, I said, you know, I've always been kind of on this highway. I kind of, you know, I knew how far I was from the next exit and where I was going, and now I'm kind of in this world of having a machete in the hand and kind of carving out my own path, and
yeah.
I don't know what's over the corner, but boy, this sure is interesting and exciting.
Yeah, approaching a kind of a giant contraption, and it's got pinwheels and cotton candy and a roller coaster going around, and as you come closer, you see these kind of giant steel teeth, and people are going, come on in, Tim, but you got to fight the teeth. Don't go near the teeth.
And I literally, okay, so I've been out here 2 weeks, and I'm going to stay out here another week. I drove out here. I drove out here with this specific It's time now for me to kind of decide whether I'm going to do something out here seriously or not. And I said to my wife, I said, this is going to be sort of a journey of exploration. I'm going to be thinking on the way down. I'm going to have my meetings and stuff, and I'm going to think on the way back. And I'm either going to kind of double down on advertising and living in Nebraska, which we love. I mean, believe me, I'm not running away from anything. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to be really serious about doing something out here and scratch and claw and do all that stuff I need to do in order to make it through that jaw and
yeah, go
all that. And I did. I had a moment of clarity. I'm going to put this on tape because I
go for it. Yeah,
because I want to remember it, and I want to. This will be one of those moments where I'll either be really embarrassed by this, or this will be good to hear later. I was in Santa Monica meeting with somebody, and afterwards, I was walking along the promenade and went into Barnes & Noble, little side story, where there's an entire section about acting. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have that in Nebraska.
No.
All the books about acting. And,
no.
And
so many corn books that you can't.
Right. How to shuck and husk.
Yes.
With, and I just kind of, I was reading some of the books about comedy writing and things, and then I was walking along, and I sat down and had dinner somewhere, and I thought, you know, I think I'm a comedy writer. I think that's what I am. I've been telling everybody for the last couple of years, I'm sort of in advertising, and I'm a writer. I write articles and advertising and some humor stuff. And all this. I think I'm a comedy writer. That kind of came clear to me. I don't know what that means yet. Maybe I live in Nebraska and write comedy from there, or maybe I move out here. Who knows? But I think I'm a comedy writer.
Well, that's a really fascinating epiphany.
And never would have reached that if it wasn't for Twitter. And a long time. I mean, Twitter gave me confidence. Twitter taught me. I mean, it's like in Steve Martin's book where 10 years to do stand-up
right.
and to perfect an act.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of went through a little bit of that with Twitter. You know, 3-4 years of constantly writing. At times not feeling like I wanted to write,
mm-hmm.
but forcing myself to write. And then seeing what connected and what didn't. And I think that has turned me into – I used to tell people all the time, it certainly made me a better writer, more concise, better construction of sentences, better use of words because of the character limit. But I think it's turned me into a comedy writer.
Have there been lines that are over 140 characters that have driven you crazy, trying to reword it in different ways and just going, it's funny, but I cannot condense it anymore?
Sometimes, although I've reached a point now where I only think in terms of small bites that will fit. I will dream fully constructed tweets. I mean,
you dream them now.
I dream them. I'm not saying they're all good, but I will literally in my dream construct these things. That's a sickness, isn't it? That's got to be some sort of new.
I don't know. Maybe it's a good T-shirt after your live show.
I dream and tweet. We need to ship this off to some medical professional to analyze it. But I mean, to refine and rewrite and rewrite and rewrite. I mean, that's what I do in advertising, writing headlines or taglines or positioning lines or whatever. It's the same thing.
Well, are you going to stick with Twitter? Because here you are. You're here writing. You're here to jump into the shark tank of writing and comedy writing and everything. You think you're going to continue?
Mm.
Or
every comedian I've talked to who has begrudgingly – all comedians kind of got on Twitter as a way to promote their gigs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be here on Friday. Tickets still remain. And then they begrudgingly realized that they have to do more, that Twitter was becoming this sort of amateur joke place. So mm-hmm. we have to get in here and provide jokes. Every single one of them is sort of like, what's the end game on this? Are we doing this forever? Are we writing jokes and sending it out over the internet forever and ever and ever? Yeah. I think I always will because it scratches a certain itch. I mean, it's just I'm not a one-liner comedian, so I'm not stealing my own material. I wouldn't have any other place to put it now. My trick now is can I write something longer? Can I do more than gags and jokes? So that'll be my challenge.
So you've been having fun for the past 2 weeks in LA for the first time, yes? Going to meetings.
Not my first time in LA or in Hollywood, but it's my
first
time.
But the
first time
where you had your – where you
first time on studio
shined
lots.
Your shoes and walked onto the lot. Dun, 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 dun.
First time
Roman
having,
centurions are walking to lunch. There's Lucille Ball.
I was telling somebody I'm really disappointed that I'm not seeing, you know, like the elephant walking by
exactly.
and the Roman gladiators eating lunch. And then – not 5 minutes later, the mentalist drives by on a bicycle in full costume, talking on a cell phone, and mm-hmm. it's like, okay, there's my little moment. But yeah,
has to be on a bicycle too.
It has to be on a bicycle.
One of my first auditions when I was out here, I was walking to the office of the person. I think it was on the Paramount lot, and Ray Walton, who played the Martian in My Favorite Martian, and you know many things, but he drove by. Possibly at 1.5 miles per hour on one of those old kind of 3-speed bikes with the big fenders and everything. And he was riding so slowly that he could have fallen over at any time. And he was an older man at the time. But, you know, I just stopped. That's the My Favorite Martian guy. He's riding by me in a bicycle.
I have had many experiences in the last couple of weeks that I think have been really good for me. I kind of need the stars knocked out of my eyes a little bit. When we met in Nebraska in the spring, you saw it. I mean, I was overwhelmed by your presence.
I did my best to knock the stars out of your eyes. Clearly, I was unsuccessful.
And you know, I mean, and my wife met you, and we were both like, "He's so normal. He's so great. This is awesome." But you're a movie star. You're a big celebrity. Coming out here, you get used to it real fast. I literally, the first night I was invited to a little premiere party, and I didn't even know what that meant, you know, and I don't know what to wear, and I'm literally fresh out of Nebraska going to this little thing, and I walk in, and it's, oh my gosh, they stop you as you walk in front of a backdrop and they're taking pictures, you know? So I walk around that and I'm instantly uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Right. And I start texting my wife in order to look like, cause my friend's not there yet.
Just to look busy.
Yeah. Well, I'm closing a deal here. Meanwhile, I'm sending a text to my wife saying, I feel very Nebraska. And then I thought, you know what? Maybe I can waste a couple minutes. I'm going to duck into the bathroom here and just kind of stand there and look in the mirror and, you know, fiddle with my hair a little bit. And I walk in and there's Jonah Hill standing there, this tiny little bathroom, and he's fixing his hair. And it's like, okay, now where do I go? But I met people there.
Are you still allowed to stay in the bathroom? Even if Jonah Hill's in the men's room, you are allowed to stay. I don't even care what he says.
He made a little motion to his posse and they wrestled me to the ground.
Did they? Yeah. Wow.
But I met a lot of people there, had conversations, you know, met Will Forte and, mm-hmm. and talked to him. I'm name dropping now.
Go for it, man. I don't even know who that is.
Saturday Night Live guy.
Oh, okay.
You know, just really, really nice, really interesting people. And like I was telling you before we started up the microphones, I really like the vibe of the creative people out here. Somebody said to me, I went into a store on that little Santa Monica area, and I bonded with a store clerk because we were both singing the same 80s song that was playing over the loudspeaker. And she asked why I was in town, and I said I was in town for a couple weeks or whatever. And she said, do you find Los Angeles inspiring? And I thought that was a really interesting question, and it kind of took me aback. And you know, you find New York inspiring because of the energy. You know, you find Chicago inspiring because of architecture and whatever. And it's kind of like, do I find L.A. inspiring? Yeah, the people. I find the people really inspiring. I mean,
in what ways?
The writers. It's a very creative community. I mean, it's very. It's like a baseball player, I think, going into the big leagues. You know, I mean, people come from here all over the world to. Use their talent and their abilities, and that's intimidating and it's inspiring, and people are making a go of it. And you know, and actors and celebrities who have turned themselves into businesses, you know, it's interesting. It's fascinating. It's inspiring.
It is a place that is just absolutely full of possibility.
Yeah.
I mean, for creative people.
I would say that.
It is. I mean, still, look, I joke about the industry and the big steel teeth and everything. And everyone does. Because, of course, there are businessmen and rapacious people waiting to just rip you off from your idea and say, well, whatever, all that stuff. But it's still.
You just described the advertising industry.
Right. But it is this kind of golden land of promise. Not promising you a living, but promising you an opportunity, a place full of possibilities where you can go. You are a different kind of a guy with different kind of ideas from other people. And here you will meet people and you'll feel like, wow, I'm like that too.
I was talking to a screenwriting friend and she said, for good and bad, this city attracts the black sheep of every family, mm-hmm. and that's about right. I mean, there are psychopaths out here. I mean, there are functioning psychopaths, people who are
any name dropping.
I've heard some stories. I could name drop. We'll wait till after the microphones are off.
Yeah. So, there are plenty. Oh, it's plenty of crazy bad people.
But you know, okay. So Halloween night, a friend took me to the silent movie theater. In Hollywood, And they were showing a screening of Vincent Price and The Tingler in Percepto. So they had wired up the seats to shock you, as the original movie did. And as I was sitting there in that little theater and looking around, and everyone, again, is so nice, and a gentleman in front of us had some Japanese candy, and he was passing it around and talking to other people. And I kind of realized – and he made a big deal. This is Japanese candy. I kind of realized that I'm surrounded here by my people. These are nerds. These are people who and the reason why everyone's so friendly is because if you've chosen to be here on this night in Halloween in Hollywood at this theater at this event, you're a certain kind of geek or nerd. We're all in this together, and it's my tribe. I think it's my tribe. You know, you had said it in the spring, because I had kind of asked what it's like to live out here, and you said, "Listen, this is it's a giant, huge place, and whatever community you want to plug into is out here. You just plug into it," and that's so true.
Right. I don't think it's one culture. It's such a kaleidoscope of microcultures. Mm-hmm. That you just find the microculture within this giant place to make your home and your friends and the things that you do and the stuff that you read, and you live in that.
And then any sort of little hobby or obsession or whatever, you can have other people out here who are also into that. I don't know. I might listen to this a long time from now and think, listen to that naive jerk. This is before he lost everything, but... I don't know.
You're not the 19-year-old who is just waiting to be cynical and bitter about everything. Buy yourself a black trench coat and just say everything's stupid and everybody's stupid except me. You've been around quite a bit, so
the cynical side of me does want to hate LA. I really do. I actually my friend also took me to the West Hollywood parade on Halloween, and mm-hmm. I so wanted to hate it. I wanted to be able to go back. I wanted this to be the moment where I go back to Nebraska and say to my wife, those people out there are horrible.
Right.
We cannot raise children out there. This is that is Satan's lair out there. And what I found were a bunch of really funny people who invested a lot of time and energy into costumes and
right,
it's
the same possibility that if you want to, I'm going to be an 8 foot tall Frankenstein with a pink flowing baby. Oh, okay.
And there was whatever. There was some interesting weird element that I didn't want to get too close to, but for the most part, it was just really
right
fun, interesting people who were creative.
And there are still people in the desert now, and this is the place to come. I'm going to the desert, and I just want to build a 45-foot-tall copper dinosaur. And people, what? I just, that's what I want to do. Now, in Nebraska, people would say, Ted is off his rocker.
Right.
And out here, people would say, that's not my thing to do. But when you're finished, give me a call. I'll come out and look at your dinosaur, and we'll we'll have a beer and we'll say, boy, that's some big dinosaur baking in the sun.
Right.
Way to go, Ted.
Right.
That's it.
Yep. And there might be somebody sitting there, how can we make money off of Ted and his dinosaur? Is there, right. is there a TV show?
Let's make a documentary about Ted making the dinosaur. It may destroy Ted's life, but we'll profit from it. And who cares really about Ted? It's about the film about Ted.
The other thing about I had another friend who lives out here who said Josh Kagan, a screenwriter, he said Hollywood's sort of like a wild game preserve with celebrities. It's like you go around and you see them sort of out of the corner of your eye, and it's like, oh, there's a zebra over there. Don't stare at it. And you just kind of get used to it.
I've been tranquilized and tagged many times.
But yeah, it is, and again, I think it's part of my, I kind of needed to be out here for a little while and get the stars knocked out of my mm-hmm. eyes and realize, this is a town of working people.
Yeah.
who are really creative writers and producers, whatever they do, and actors, and they're all just trying to
do things to entertain people.
Yeah.
That's noble, isn't it?
I think it is.
That's a noble life.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
So, look, as one of the guys who was instrumental in the exponential increase of Twitter, of this social networking, of the one sentence being able to put yourself out there into the entire world, where do you think it's going? I mean, as you said, it's gone to overthrowing the Egyptian government, to creating the flash mob phenomena, to doing all of these immediate things that are both incredibly good, that are dangerous, that are political. Are we done with that, or is there going to be a way to do more than that, that the next thing will do, that, you know, whatever it is, squeegee. I'll do squeegee now because you could, you know, a holographic image of yourself acting out the joke can actually.
I think that, and I'm not a tech guy. I'm not, people are surprised to hear that. I can barely make my phone function. But what caught my eye about Twitter is the incredible simplicity and the power of kind of instantly being able to communicate, you know, the very function of Twitter. And I think what they've done really well is kind of keep that. I mean, they haven't screwed with it too much. Mm-hmm. They have a little bit. But I think the ability to communicate, whether you're trying to get an idea across or whether you're trying to just be funny or whether you're trying to organize something, the ability to decentralize communication and be able to talk instantly is, I mean, there's no, you can't put that genie back in the bottle. I mean, it's changing the world, and it will continue to change the world, whether it's Twitter or something else. I mean, I actually had the opportunity. I was at a advertising conference in France over the summer, again, entirely because of Twitter. And I found myself in a press room with Patti Smith. And I asked her kind of that same question. She's not on Twitter, but what do you think about Twitter and where it's heading and the power of it or whatever? And I was kind of expecting this sort of response of, you know, this poetry and the power of words over images and all this. And she said, well, you know, lots of governments really are paranoid about it and scared, so that makes it a good thing.
That's good. What is Patti Smith doing in France?
What
does she do? She had a gig or something?
She was a speaker at this conference.
Wow.
And getting some sort of lifetime award or something. But somebody asked her, why are you at an advertising conference?
Yeah.
And her response was sort of, I'll go wherever the F I want to go. And
Well, good to see Patti. Hasn't changed a bit, Patti. Good for you. Because the night belongs to advertising.
You know what? And she sat there and talked bad about advertising. So it was good. She was there and held the industry's feet to the fire.
But like when, you know, this anti-government Twitter thing, isn't Twitter, or don't we see in Facebook and the guys in the cutoff blue jean shorts and flip flops who were supposed to, you know, hey, look, it's just us, who as soon as they could sold every bit of information about all of us to giant corporations.
Yeah.
I mean, won't it just be meet the new boss, same as the old boss?
To a certain extent, but I you know, there's always going to be that next wave of pirates who are going to, you know, create their own new thing. And I don't know. There is no doubt that blogging and social media and all that, what it's done is it's taken away the power of centralized forces saying, here's what you need to know. And now we can know directly.
Wait a minute. Don't you mess with my Anderson Cooper. He tells me what to think.
But then I think what you find are these little trusted curators who kind of take their information and put it together. I mean, you wouldn't believe everything that everyone says on Twitter, but then you find people that are sort of trusted sources and you kind of create your own little, this is not interesting. This conversation, I've gone off into a whole realm of uninteresting talk.
So we're making up, we're all deciding on our own informational curators and we're going there.
Yeah, who we trust. But what has been interesting in the last couple of years is seeing how, you know, if a reporter is standing there and Obama says something, is that reporter bound to ABC News to file a report through normal channels, or does that reporter instantly tweet something out and have it go viral? You know, I mean, who controls some of that information? That's still kind of being, still kind of shaking itself out. It's interesting.
Wow.
Sort of interesting. Not interesting enough for a comedy podcast.
No, I think you were right. I think it's really uninteresting. I think the last, what would you say, 27 minutes?
How long have we been on?
27 minutes?
How long have we been on?
30, 40 minutes, something like that.
The last 30 to 40 minutes.
Last 30 to 40 minutes?
I've been a fairly uninteresting.
The last 41 minutes. Actually, a minute before we even began recording, I felt a lull. That I think we've just continued.
This will all be edited.
For 40 minutes. None of this stuff is even on the thing. None of this stuff. I just use this to fall asleep at night. I'm an insomniac.
What other Hollywood stories do you want me to tell you about? As the person who lives out here, I'm the guy out of Nebraska. What do you want to see?
Well, I think it's fascinating that you know, it's that you just came out here, that you're really literally freshly out here as a person who is saying, I'm a comedy writer. I think this experiment has gone very well, and I think I want to get in there. And you, as you told me before we're on, I mean, you have gone into those writers' rooms. You have been invited. Come in to this writers' room, big conference table full of guys and girls with their notebooks and their pens and their ideas and their sardonic, you know, wittiness. That I'm over everything.
Here's as somebody completely outside of the industry. Getting into a writer's room, I didn't realize how weird that was. I didn't realize how weird it was to be able to contribute and all this. But there are things that are just taken for granted out here that when you get thrown into it, it's sort of interesting. The script is on a big screen in front of the room. You're not writing. You're speaking. There's somebody paid there to type into the script and to know final draft and all that kind of stuff. A lot of the people in the room have backgrounds in acting and in theater and don't just toss out an idea, but act it out and speak it out. And that's actually very new to me. Writing to me is sitting by myself in front of a computer and writing. And, you know, maybe I'll sit there and kind of read it out loud a little bit when I'm done with it. But to sit and act and see what words come out of your mouth as you're sort of in the moment, that was very fresh and new to me. And the idea that somebody else is writing things down, it's a very strange dynamic. I told you before we got on the air, again, I'll admit this here. My first day, I wanted to blow my head off. I mean, I literally... 7 to 10 times during the day, I went into I quit. I'm going back to Nebraska. This is horrible. This is awful. I cannot keep up. These people are at a totally different level.
Was it the speed, you think? The speed with which they were coming up with gags?
Again, I just had no idea what to expect. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess I kind of expected rational discussion. Does this part work? Well, how about this? Do we need a new joke here? But it was just kind of went right into it, and it was pitching ideas, and there was a pacing to that. And the story runner is a uber genius who's moving scenes around in his head, and I can't even picture what he's doing. And it was just very overwhelming. And the jokes being pitched were really good, and being shot down. And there was a dynamic to it that I found very different than a concepting room in advertising. I went home that night and thought, what is a good hotel to check into to blow my head off? who do I want to find my body the next day? I mean, it was just one of those dark moments of the soul of this is awful. But I reached such a low point that it's sort of like I have nothing to lose to go back the next day, right? I might as well just go back and
since I'm
have
quitting,
fun.
Right.
Right.
Since I'm not doing this, let me go back and just we'll do it like a carnival ride. And
since I've already mentally committed suicide, I'll go back as Gandalf the White tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And it was great. And I think just I had to kind of go through that process. And the next day was much better and throwing out ideas and again, nobody has been. Everyone's been very supportive of me and all this. It was all me. You know, it was all me kind of looking into something totally new and saying, wow, this is really hard.
Well, it does foster insecurity. One of those when you hear what to you is a really good joke of somebody else and it doesn't even gets no traction. Nobody even pays attention to it. It's just thrown in the trash before the end of it, and you're thinking, wow, that was pretty good.
I'll be the first to admit that, you know, writing jokes on Twitter is a whole lot different than professional guys sitting in a room throwing out ideas. I mean, I realized very early on that it's just a different thing. It's really professional. These people are really good, and I just need to kind of step up my game. I mean, I'm not even sure on that first day I really pitched many jokes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just I found myself kind of falling into a observing mode, you know.
But your show of shows, I mean, Neil Simon would just kind of whisper jokes over in the corner. They say right. that were so loud. It was so, you know, Mel Brooks, Carl Reiner, Sid Caesar, all these guys all just gesticulating and shout. And it should be this and this and that. Oh, it was an incredible room, you know, just to think about. But Neil Simon was just the quiet guy down at the end of the table. Well, I think they could say that. And you had to, you know, somebody had to be sitting next to him. Go, wait, Neil said something, you know. Wait, let's, you know, and he would mention something and it happened to be funny. But that was the only way he could do it because he couldn't stand up and go, hey, everybody shut up. Listen to this.
And I must say, I love stories of old Hollywood. And you know, I'm finding myself in between meetings and stuff out here. It's like, I'm going to go find the steps that Laurel and Hardy moved a piano up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to go find that. And I do. I'm going to go eat at Buddy Hackett's favorite chicken place.
Uh huh. Right.
That he and his comedy writers would sit in a car outside after they ate and drink in the car. You mm-hmm. know, I love that kind of stuff. Seriously,
It is fun. I mean, Buddy Hackett's house is right as you right near Sunset Boulevard over there. You drive by it. I drive by it all the time. But it's really it's wonderful to have you coming to Los Angeles. It's interesting to have a person of your intelligence and talent, certainly, jumping into this big, crazy carnival right before my eyes, and you know, thanks for being here.
Well, and again, thanks for you've been very encouraging to have me come out here, and it's required.
I was lying then. We were in Nebraska. Remember that? We were in Omaha, and I was like, yeah, Tim, that's a great idea. Yes, I was having a meatball sandwich and blowing you off, really. I was just...
That was a great moment, sitting there having coffee in Omaha, and you talking about the strangeness of Back to the Future, and then you turning and seeing Back to the Future on the TV playing in the coffee shop. That was one of those moments. And you just turned to me without missing a beat, and you just pointed at the wall and go, Tim, my gift to you. And you pointed to the TV.
Well, it was such a pop moment of just an incongruous, incredible, in Omaha, at a coffee place. You didn't want to bring up the whole... You know, Back to Future
really
thing. You tried desperately.
Even after Johnny B. Goode was playing on the.
Yeah, I congratulate you for taking half of our conversation not talking about Back to the Future and then finally being overpowered by something in your. I have to say.
You
it.
Know, I think you brought it up.
I didn't bring it
I
up.
I think you
down.
Brought it up and then I
brought it up.
I dove into it.
Nice.
I think at one point you said.
I said something.
You do know that I was
future.
In Back to the Future. Right? Because you haven't brought
yes,
that up.
I do, yeah. I do that a lot. No, I can't. I've realized in conversations often, I'm not even kidding. I can't say the word future or back. I really can't. I say the part that is not my front is really giving me pains. Because if you said, my back is back where? Back in your future?
You brought it up.
You brought it up. Listen, that car, did it fly really? Or what? You know, so you're done.
Well, and I found myself in a room this week with I've grown from that experience, Tom.
I would hope so.
I found myself in a room this week with Peter Billingsley.
Uh-huh.
And I for that that was during my meltdown day.
Yes.
And I so badly wanted to just say, I love Christmas Story.
I know. And I'm sure everyone does.
And at some point, you just kind of realize that doesn't help anybody or anything.
And what's that dude, 67 now or something?
And by the way, smart. Mm-hmm. Really smart, really good. And again, I must say, it's been eye-opening to me to see the perspective from actors in terms of the writing process. They just think differently than internet writers like me.
In what way do you think? What way did Peter demonstrate that to you?
Really insightful character motivation type of stuff. Things like character and emotion and emotional development, you know, things that are part of storytelling, you know, as opposed to joke and gag writing, which is where I'm starting from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that does happen often, is that the director is rolling his eyes, but you really are trying to communicate. It is difficult to perform what you're asking me to do, which is to be very angry in this line, and then a second and a half from then laughing at this joke that the person across the room said.
Right.
And then what? You just yell at him, and then you realize the joke.
Paper.
Wrote it like that.
Just
so,
read it.
Okay,
Tom.
I'll act it like that. I guess it's not going to make sense in a human way, but I guess you know, if you were making this a cartoon, I guess it'll work. But thanks so much for being with me. I hope I didn't bore you too much.
I had a great time.
There was the inner lull of about 37 minutes of the inner, I call it a hammock. It's sort of a hammock of interest. We begin in a fascinating way.
I'm hoping we go off and have lunch and come back and do this all over again.
Then we
start from scratch with, and you sit there and say, don't talk about any of that stuff over there. Let's talk about something. Can you make up interesting anecdotes?
I'm going to make up a bunch of signal flags. That as we're recording, I'll just hold up one, which means change subject, go in this direction. Most of them, of course, are like, let's go back to talking about me.
But bring it back to the future.
Yeah. I'll have a gigantic flag with my headshot on it. I'll be waving that. And that just means, hey, let's get back to Tom. But thank you.
Thanks
Tim Seidel, Ben Banana. Let's go have lunch. Well, Tim Seidel doesn't need my help with it or anything, but if you're not following Bad Banana on Twitter, I strongly suggest you do so. Tim is a guy still at the beginning of a wonderful adventure, going after his creativity and his own humor, and ended up coming to California and writing in television. So it's amazing. Thanks for listening. I'm glad you listened. I hope you had fun. I sure did. Thanks to Emily Wilson for producing. Thanks to Chris and Katie over at Nerdist.com. And thanks to McPherson Guitars and Dean Markley Strings for always helping me out. Come see a live show, would you? And come up and tell me that you listen to the podcast. But mostly, I thank you. Consider subscribing or telling a friend. And we'll talk to you next time. Big Pop Fun, out.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.